Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, and 103.3 in Durango, Colorado. Today I'm talking with Ray John, the Aragon, about his new book, New Mexico Native American Lore, Skinwalkers, Kachinas, Spirits, and Park Omens. Well, hello, Ray John.
Hi there. Glad to hear you.
And you too. I really appreciate your new book, New Mexico Native American Lore, Skinwalkers, Kachinas, Spirits, and Dark Omens.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Uh-huh. It's a beautiful book. The cover's beautiful. The artwork inside's great also.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, before we proceed, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what this book is about?
Well, it's about bringing New Mexico Native American culture out to light, and but people can know more about the history, about the legends and folklore, and what has transpired through the centuries, essentially. And then very few people know that New Mexico territory spread out vastly with undefined borders,
mm-hmm.
including parts of Colorado and of Arizona, of course, when it was New Mexico territory, and so was Nevada, and parts of California and parts of Texas. And, you know, quite a large area of undefined territory in early maps. And people forget that and go by the present United States and how the states are divided up. And when they think about New Mexico, they just think about that, the present day area of the state.
Right.
And they don't realize that there was much more than that,
mm-hmm.
as far as land and the area, the territory that was encompassed.
So you cover a lot of specific areas as well as a timeline in here, talking about
uh-huh.
Choco Canyon and talking about how things changed and how some things are still the same and vary among the tribes and relationships with the Spanish people also.
Well, you know that when you think about the history, much has changed, of course, not only New Mexico, but throughout the United States as far as indigenous cultures and peoples are concerned, and especially over here in New Mexico, you know, they forget that they were the Navajo and they were the Paiute and Arapaho and Comanche and in some parts Cheyenne and you know, so
right.
There were an Apache, of course. There were very many tribes that were that were included in New Mexico territory, and so that history is extensive and little covered. So
right.
Hopefully my book covers all those areas.
Yeah, I was really impressed at how many tribes were walking around this area then. Because
mm-hmm.
you're right, we think of, you know, we think the Navajo, maybe Apache, but there were many more.
And usually the Pueblo are the ones that are written about. And,
right.
And are thought of, you know, when they have the large inter-ceremonial festivals, for example, in Gallup and even over here at the New Mexico State Fair and other areas where some of those celebrations are other tribes from the United States and even Canada are invited to come over and participate.
I think that's something that people don't realize. And I also appreciate how you've brought up a lot of these interesting facts and show how they evolved, but so many of them are still practiced today.
One of the things that I wanted to bring out about through my book and my writings, of course, is the heritage and culture and traditions For example, the Latino or Hispanic heritage in New Mexico and its impact on the United States in history and and other traditions and cultures in the country that because there was a great deal of interchange and intercultural interchange, like I said, where there was trade and commerce, and people don't realize how extensive that trade and commerce was among the indigenous and then I read recently that three-quarters of the United States is under control of the Spanish at one period of time, and Native Americans, of course, were considered Americans, I mean, Spanish citizens, automatically.
Right.
And, but this is very different under the United States and under the British.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's fascinating the relationships that you cover here. And the territory, almost territory wars, and that some people thought, well, there was a lot of confusion on those boundaries for quite some time.
Yes, in fact, when General Kearny came into New Mexico in 1846, I wrote a book, New Mexico and the Mexican-American War, and very little has ever been written in the past about that period of history and the events that were involved. They say, well, he had a bloodless conquest. He came in and went through and left New Mexico territory, went on to California. And of course, back in those days, you know, there wasn't a telegraph and there weren't phones. And, you know, so communication was sparse. And it was by horse and buggy or whatever, you know.
Right.
And, so news about anything like that wasn't taking place. And so, of course, New Mexico fought in various battles. And then the Native Americans aided the Native Hispanics and joined them and in battles, and you know, so a lot of that information or history isn't covered. Just like in my New Mexico Stolen Lands, I've tried to cover that history, so the people that are readers will be more aware of what actually happened and took place.
And so that brings me to the question: how you found your research? I mean, you did extensive research. You've got a long bibliography, so you worked hard on that. Where did you find these sources?
I came from a family that collected documents and collected letters and other material. You know, for example, my dad, he was very much into history himself, and. And he preserved papers and documents that were handed down in our family. So that's pretty much what started me off. And then I through the years, I added more into that archive of material and documents. And it turned out that when I work on my books, and then I collected an extensive library of books on my own.
Oh, I bet.
And so when I go into a specific subject that I'm working on, I have the material to work with. And our family, I was also lucky that photographs were, that I inherited photographs and photographic evidence and other illustrative material also that I could use in my book. So,
I noticed that your family way back were landowners way back.
Yes.
At the beginning of this history too.
Yes. And you know, one of the things that we fail to realize is that during the early history in New Mexico, Spanish colonists and the Native Americans traded with each other. And in fact, in my mother's family, she always spoke about the Comancheros that were also in my ancestry. And those were Hispanic or Spanish traders that traded with the Comanche Indians and vice versa. They needed goods and fruits and vegetables or remedies, herbal remedies, and you know, so and leather goods, you know, that and as far as the New Mexico Latino or Spanish history was concerned, blacksmithing and and not very many people know that blacksmithing was taught to the Indians by the Spanish settlers.
Right, isn't that something? Well, the whole trade thing you cover, I found it fascinating that, like, macaw feathers were found at Chaco Canyon.
Yes, and they're still doing investigations over there. I think a very slight percentage of Chaco Canyon has been explored, and archaeologists have gone in there, and very little has been brought to the surface, or or has been dug up. So there's much more waiting out there to be discovered, just like other archaeological sites around the world. You know, I'm amazed every single time that I look on the internet and I find out what discoveries are taking place throughout the world. And then every single thing that they bring out, they say the same thing: history will be rewritten.
Mm-hmm. Right. The more they learn, the less they know, almost.
Yes, I think like ocean archaeological explorations, I think it's only like 1%.
Wow.
Of the oceans have been explored. Yeah, because of the size of the oceans. And they're still finding shipwrecks that date back to the Roman period, and the Phoenician period, and the Egyptian period. And,
amazing. That really is incredible. And there's so many stories left unfinished and so many questions, like what happened? Why did the people leave this place? And was there a massacre or what?
As far as New Mexico territory's history, there were many things that impacted the history and the events that took place. And one was, I guess we could call it climate change of the past.
Okay, right.
You know, there were droughts and people that are going through droughts, they couldn't harvest any crops, and game was disappearing. So they left one area and traveled to another. And you know, we're still thinking, hearing about, and reading about the Bering Strait and people coming across on a land bridge and during an ice age and escaping from other areas and trying to find a better environment and a better climate. And And there was movement of people, so from right. one place to another. So that's thousands of years old, and we don't really know how long. Or archaeologists and those researching do not know how long, or how many, how far back the settlements took place in New Mexico or the Southwest or in other parts of the United States. It could have been. It keeps on going back and forth from several thousand years ago to tens of thousands of years ago, and they're still finding more and more.
And still learning every time.
And still learning, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought the story of the Salt Woman
yes.
was fascinating.
For the Native Americans, when we think about Kachinas, for example, they had around 500 gods that they revered, and for them there was a god for everything, mm-hmm. including plant life and mm-hmm. and insect life, and but everything had to be respected. Right. Water resources had to be respected, and the forest had to be respected, and so among all these things that were to be revered and honored in our environment and society, that would help us to continue living and mm-hmm. aid us in our existence. And of course, you know, like I say about things that were taking place and the climate during those periods, different various periods, they prayed to their Kachinas, and they were very much involved with the spiritual. Everything in life was spiritual. And in honoring spirituality, they were more an environment conscious, mm-hmm. and to pass this on to from one generation to the next. And as far as the salt was concerned, I mentioned in my book that salt was considered more valuable than gold.
Right, you said that, right.
Yes, and in the Americas. And you think, well, why would they consider salt more valuable than gold? It's because they depended on salt for anything. And, you know, for example, flavoring their foods and healing.
Right.
Think about Epsom salts.
Right, right.
You know, that our people used. If one had a pain on your foot, if your hand was swollen, you would use Epsom salts, and the swelling would go down, or your foot would feel better. You know.
And so it was also important for the livestock.
And the real livestock, animal. Of course, yes.
Yes.
When they brought the cattle in, and mm-hmm. you know, we think about the Salt Lakes and Wilder, New Mexico, right. and that history that was virtually unknown up until I brought it out in my book.
Yeah, I was completely unfamiliar with that.
Yeah, the state historian, Rick Hendricks, mm-hmm. was a state historian, and he did wrote up a story about the New Mexico Salt Lakes, and he had a tour that he conducted, and I told him, well, there was the history is much longer than what you wrote about in the tour that you gave. So, and that was another thing in my family. You know, my father actually owned the Salt Lakes at one time, and that he inherited through the family, and he worked at the Salt Lakes and had been photographed and including my book. And a whole archive that I donated to the Salsa's Research and Study Department at the University of New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
And I told them, well, you guys are going to have the most extensive collection of materials that have to do with the New Mexico Salt Lakes. And, you know, when we research out further, the Native Americans, they were called salineros, those that worked the salt mines and the Salt Lake, traded salt all the way down into Mexico.
Wow.
There's other Mesoamerican groups, and the trade in turquoise, the trade in salt was all the way to New Mexico.
Amazing.
Into the Mesoamerican tribes.
Mm-hmm. And I saw in here, there's like you said, there's a lot of illustrations. Some of these photographs came from your archives, but then there's some that you did, and I believe your wife did some paintings also.
Yeah, my wife is an artist, also an archivist, and she is a Santera, and she has a long history in her family. In fact, she's a direct descendant of Don Bernardo Mira y Pacheco, who was a Spanish cartographer and considered the first Santero of New Mexico, Santero folk art.
Oh, wow.
And she had this affinity to doing New Mexico folk art, including the Tablos and Santos. She just had that ingrained gift and ingrained way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that she's a direct descendant of this famous New Mexico Santero.
Wow.
And that's just something that she inherited.
Isn't that something?
Through her genealogy.
Wow.
So she does, she's done a great deal of artwork and paintings. In fact, she was featured in a book that was published in New York City on the arts of New Mexico by a book written by George Alcona.
Oh.
USA Today. I think it was called USA Fiestas Today or something like that.
Oh, well, that's great.
Some of her artwork was featured in there several years ago. And I can rely on her to help me with illustrations, mm-hmm. and help me do the design work, because she knows about designing and illustrating.
A joint project. That's great.
Yes.
Did you pick out something you can read for us?
I had a quote in every single...
Every
chapter.
Right. And that was pretty neat, yeah.
And the reason I included those in there is because, you know, we always get one side of a story.
Right.
And it depends on who's writing the history.
Exactly.
So I've always had this affinity towards Indian leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And things that they that I learned about as far as the Indian leaders, and I think you saw that I mentioned Geronimo,
right,
and Cochise and Vittorio, and
right.
several other Indian leaders. So when I did some further research, I found out that there were things that they said, and of course, you know, they said them in their native languages, and then mm-hmm. they were transcribed. You must speak straight, so that every word you say may go as sunlight into our hearts. And that was Chiricahua Chief Cochise. And there are several that I have at the beginning of every single chapter.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the persons that I read about and heard about, especially in New Mexico, was Geronimo. And Geronimo, of course, one of the things about Geronimo is that the word in Spanish is Geronimo. And so he was named after a Catholic saint named Saint Jerome.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Wow. So, who would have thought?
That's how Jeronimo came about.
Huh.
San Jeronimo, spelled with a J, is a Catholic saint. So he was named after a Catholic saint in the church. But anyway, it says the song that I was singing is an ancient song, so old that no one knows who sang it first. It has been handed down in our people from one generation to the next. This song was taught to me as a very young child. Now it is my song, as well as a song of my people. The song belongs to me as well as to others. It is a holy song. It has great power. The song tells how I go through the air to a very holy place where you soon will give me power to do great and very powerful things. I'm surrounded by clouds, and as I go through the air, I also become a very powerful and enduring spirit. Geronimo, the Dunk Kohi leader. So when I read that, I was stunned.
Right.
Because you always hear about the negative things and you don't hear about the positive things about indigenous
right.
cultures and the United States and indigenous cultures like Canada and New Zealand and Australia, you know, and what happened to the Afro-Americans and in other parts of the world and slavery. And you hear about the boarding schools, and I included that in my final chapter about bad omens, you know, and because Native American spirituality, they felt that things were going to affect them as a people, these people that would be negative that they would have to deal with, and they would have to see how they could deal with those the negative impact and how they could survive it.
So it's pretty impressive, and this is what you do. I mean, you do so much research and writing. Last time I talked to you, you said you had 20 books. So what?
Yes, and I'm working on my 21st now.
Are you? Wow.
Yeah.
And are they all about the history and different aspects of New Mexico?
I cover the folklore, legends, and diverse cultures, impacts on history, and I try to relate the truth and facts as compared to fallacies and misconceptions that have been written about for so many years, and especially in New Mexico history.
One thing I appreciate that you've done with this book here, New Mexico Native American Lore, is that you've taken some of their suspicions, I guess you would say, and you have not discredited them as being possibly supernatural. I mean, you don't discount them. You're saying, yeah, well, we don't really know the whole story behind these. So I found that very fascinating that there's still, like, powers that we can't tap into.
You know, as a historian and somebody that does research and that studies history, there is so much more that we can learn.
Yes.
We're barely tapping this evidence and history. And new things are coming to light, and new things are being revealed. And I've learned much more than I could have included in that last book.
I bet.
But, and then perhaps it will be in another book.
Good.
For example, I was thinking about the way history has been written in the past, and it's written by those that have been victorious over the ones that have been defeated.
Right, right.
So that's the basis of history that we read in books.
It's true.
So when we're reading that, we have to look at it with a... my dad used to tell me, you have to take things with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of salt, right.
Yeah, and my mom taught me as a young kid with dichos, New Mexico proverbs and sayings. As a little boy, she had pretty much a proverb or saying or a dicho for pretty much everything.
It
was what I did or what I was going to do. She had a dicho for it. And she said, well, sal de la casa y cuéntale lo que te pasa, leave home, and you'll be turning telling me about what happened to you.
Oh, wow.
And dígame con quién andas, yo te diré quién eres. Tell me who you're hanging around with, and I'll tell you who you are.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. So I was looking at my friends and thinking, are these good friends, or are they friends that will lead me into trouble? Because, you know, that's exactly what she was saying. So, in other words, the story of La Llorona, you know, the Wailing Woman, I wrote a book on that also. And that you have to be careful with waterways and playing in ditches or arroyos. And, you know, because the story that was told to myself and my friends as a kid growing up is that we have to be careful out there because La Llorona could appear suddenly and she could take you with her. And she's a spirit that's searching for her children, and she could take you and we'll never see you again.
Right.
And one time, we lived in Las Vegas, New Mexico, where I was born. And there was an arroyo near our home. Mm-hmm. And there was a torrential rain up in what they called El Crestón, the mountains nearby. Mm-hmm. And a torrential rain, waters went through there, and I just couldn't believe the way the rushing waters were. In fact, I pulled my own kids over there, and I told them, look at this. Can you believe those waters can take you in a second? And it happened from 1 minute to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Before there was nothing there, and all of a sudden the rushing waters were there. And so I told them, this is the story of La Llorona. So be careful.
Very good. Yeah. That's the whole purpose there.
So there were moral stories that I write, and then, of course, try to write against the misconceptions about Native American history. Mm-hmm. And then Hispanic history in New Mexico that had a tremendous impact in the history of the United States, of course. You know, we had many New Mexico leaders that were extremely powerful and influential, like United States Senator Dennis Chavez.
Right.
And United States Senator Joseph Montoya. And the thing is, if you read about United States Senator Dennis Chavez, he was a proponent of civil rights and equal justice, one of the first ones in American history that others followed, and very few people know about that, how much power he had as a United States senator, and his impact and input on United States Senate and the history of the United States, but very few people know about that. He was from New Mexico.
There's a lot of history here that just hasn't been revealed, and I appreciate that you're doing some of this.
I've dedicated myself to trying to do things for our youth, children and youth, and so that they can have role models they can look up to, and people in our history that they can esteem, and that includes, of course, our indigenous cultures, because you know about the Indian leaders in American history and New Mexico history, it's that they were trying to sustain their heritage, traditions, and cultures, and provide leadership for their children and youth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the real history, you know, that we don't hear about.
Right.
And how like I said about Geronimo. I mean, if you read about Geronimo, he was imprisoned and he was out in a stockade. And
right.
And yet he's highly regarded among the Apaches.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And other indigenous groups, they're Sitting Bull, and we didn't realize that Sitting Bull was considered a holy man among the Sioux, and that he didn't promote conflict or warfare.
Mm-hmm.
He promoted peace and harmony.
Right.
And he promoted his success for his people, and hopefully what I write is, you know, like I say, especially in New Mexico, we need something because we're ranked 50th in education in the United States. We shouldn't be in that place. We should be number one.
I agree.
And I think, you know, what I've seen in the past is that, even as an educator, is that when you talk about culture and traditions, and that you should not only have a respect for your past and history,
mm-hmm.
but you should regard it highly, it helps them to succeed. Because they know something about where they came from and where they're going, and be able to have esteem for their history and past, and not dwell on anything negative, but dwell mm-hmm. on the positive side of things. That's pretty much throughout the United States,
mm-hmm.
because the United States is a melting pot.
It is.
Whether we want to realize it or not, it's a melting pot of
different very
people.
True.
All that those histories should be in and where people came from, whether that's from Ireland or from Italy or from Greece or whichever area they came from. And most people came to the United States seeking a better way of life.
Exactly.
And opportunities for themselves and their children.
Right.
And if they came from India or Pakistan, it doesn't make any difference. And fortunately that they can find in the United States the ability to be able to succeed and go further.
And that was Ray John de Aragon talking about his latest book, New Mexico, Native American Lore, Skinwalkers, Kachina Spirits, and Dark Omens. This is Tracy Hales with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico, and 103.3 in Durango, Colorado.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.